Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's election day in Virginia, where, according to recent polling, Republican Glenn Youngkin and Democrat Terry McAuliffe are in a virtual tie in the race for governor. The outcome of the race is likely to have national implications, with many seeing it as a referendum on Democrats nationally and a bellwether ahead of 2022's midterm elections. We'll break down the closing arguments in the Virginia governor's race in tonight's Hold the Line.
And so we find ourselves tonight, thinking about what can happen tomorrow. And what can happen tomorrow will be a statement that will be heard across this country, because America needs us to vote tomorrow as well. America's watching.
Welcome to Hold the Line. I'm Buck Sexton. That was Glenn Youngkin at a rally in Loudoun County, Virginia last night. Look, this is quite a race, friends. It is a dead heat. I mean, it's very close. Real Clear Politics average polling for the state of Virginia gubernatorial race right now. Glenn Youngkin, 49%. Terry McAuliffe, 47%. So you're talking about just a couple percentage points separating these two from who will be in the governor's mansion. Now, let's just start with this. Virginia went 10 points for Biden in the last election. 10 points. That's a huge swing for the Democrats, or now going against the Democrats, of course, assuming that these polls are even close to accurate. You could have a situation here where the Democrats have to take some lessons learned from this, even if Terry McAuliffe were to squeak out a victory. And here's what's gone on. Glenn Youngkin has run a campaign based upon what he views as issues of importance to the people of Virginia. Things like whether you can be involved in the education of your child, go to school board meetings, have your voice heard as a parent, whether critical race theory and the divisive poison that it spreads into our society should be allowed to be taught, the political indoctrination of students into left-wing groupthink, whether that should be allowed to continue, and also things like fixing the DMV. Yeah, believe it or not, Glenn Youngkin brought that up last night at his rally. So that's what he's talking about. What will help the folks of Virginia? What would he do if he had the power to try and make life just a little bit better in Virginia? Terry McAuliffe, the former Democrat governor of Virginia, thinks he's running against Donald Trump, apparently.
Well, we're going to put an end to Donald Trump's future plans right here in Virginia. I've beaten Trump twice in Virginia. Tomorrow we go 3-0.
I mean, he's not running against Donald Trump. That's weird, right? You might say, all right, well, that's just one little soundbite. You know, that's not really indicative overall of the kind of campaign that McAuliffe has been running. Really? Well, here's just a taste. This is from the Youngkin campaign of how often, somehow, remember, Donald Trump is not in elected office anywhere, is not running anywhere, is in private life. But the McAuliffe campaign seems confused about that, or do they? Here you go.
Donald Trump.
He keeps invoking Trump.
Have you made this race too much about Trump?
No.
Trump.
Do you know, Dan, this isn't about Trump.
Yeah. It's clear McAuliffe thinks that his voters are morons. I mean, this is the clearest evidence I think you could have of how he's really just talking down to people, right? I'm just going to say Trump and they'll vote for me, as if that addresses anything here. It's absurd, but here's what you need to know about Terry McAuliffe. He's a slimy hack and a liar. Here he is claiming that critical race theory is, which has become, understand this, central in this gubernatorial fight, because Youngkin has said that they'll get rid of critical race theory. He stood against it. He also stands in support of parents who are upset that their children are being taught that there are oppressors and the oppressed, the victimized, based upon skin color in our society. Very divisive, undermining stuff to be teaching kids in school. McAuliffe figured that the best tactic to deal with this was to just straight up lie about it. Here you go.
He talks about critical race theory. Let's be clear, folks. Critical race theory has never been taught in the Commonwealth of Virginia. He says day one he's going to ban it. He's going to ban something that doesn't exist.
Yeah, so I guess all those parents who are showing up because they saw lesson plans or they heard teachers on Zoom classes talking about critical race theory, or I don't know, maybe they just Googled the Virginia Department of Education website and saw that, yes, there's in fact critical race theory plans on that website that they advise teachers to work into the curriculum. Yeah, I guess all those people are crazy. Or Terry McAuliffe is a liar. There's some options here. We can figure out which one it is. Terry McAuliffe has also said that Virginia, to give you a sense of the level of pandering, this is a guy who sends his children to the most expensive private school in the region. It's over $40,000 a year, the Potomac School. That's where his kids go to school. But he wants everyone else's kids to go to underperforming public schools where they're teaching racist, nonsense, critical race theory. And if you have a problem with that, well, McAuliffe wants you to know, I don't know, maybe it's because there are too many white teachers. This is what he says.
And I promise you, we've got to diversify our teacher base here in Virginia. 50% of the students at Virginia schools, K-12, 50% are students of color, and yet 80% of the teachers are white. We all know what we have to do in a school to make everybody feel comfortable in school. So let's diversify. So here's what I'm going to do. We'll be the first state in America. If you'll teach for 5 years here in Virginia in a high-demand area, that'd be geographic or coursework, we will pay room, board, and tuition at any college, any university, any HBCU here in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Unbelievable. Yeah, we all know what to do. No, we actually don't think that that's. We don't think we should run schools based on teachers hiring based on racial quotas, which is really what he's talking about. Here's an independent Virginia mom who says that she's voting for Glenn Youngkin because of the school issue.
You're a swing voter.
Yeah, I'm a swing voter. I'm the person that politicians sort of love and hate.
Dana Jackson, whose daughter is now in high school, is an independent. She's voting Republican this year, and she sees others like her.
I have some friends that are Democrats who have never voted red in their life. And this time they voted every red box they could find.
Let's hope that that's indicative of what's going on across the state of Virginia tonight, this evening, and that there will be a red wave to speak of tomorrow. We'll see. Looking good so far, but it ain't over till it's over. Glenn Youngkin's run a heck of a race, and Terry McAuliffe is an odious fellow. We'll see how it shakes out. We'll have more on the Virginia governor's race with CEO of American Majority and Virginia native, Ned Ryan, when we come back. You ever thought about investing in real estate? If you have, I want you to take me up on this recommendation. Go to doneforyoubuck.com, where you can learn more about my friends at Done For You Real Estate. If you haven't checked them out, let me make this easy for you. These guys have found a way to make real estate investing straightforward. Their system, it flat out works. I know because I'm using it. It allows everyday hardworking Americans like you and me to finally own investment real estate without all the risk and difficulty of doing it on your own. Look, I can't tell you in 60 seconds here how important it is you check these guys out. So how about this? If you visit doneforyoubuck.com, at the top of the page is a podcast interview I did with Done For You Real Estate. You can hear my personal experience with their company in my own words. I'll tell you about it in detail, picking the city, the house, getting the broker, the loan, even getting a tenant in place so I get cash flow coming to me every month. Visit doneforyoubuck.com, listen to the podcast interview, and give my friends a chance to show you what they can do for you. Ned Ryan, coming up. Stay with us. Today, Republican gubernatorial candidate Glenn Youngkin said voters are sick and tired of recycled and divisive politics. And this is coming from his confidence in ability to defeat Democrat opponent Terry McAuliffe. If Youngkin defeats the known frontrunner, will the Republican victory foretell a GOP revolution coming up into the 2022 midterms? Ned Ryan, CEO of American Majority, joins now to give his thoughts on the possible outcomes of this election. Ned, good to see you.
Good to see you, Buck. Yeah, no, this is a very important election for moving forward, not only for Virginia, but the country.
Now, as people are watching this, obviously, there's going to be more information out there, stuff coming in. So just give us, from the broad strokes, how do we get to this point where McAuliffe is having a very nervous night at best when he was supposed to be running against a political unknown who had no name recognition in the state or anywhere else and was just going to beat him easily? That's not the case.
No, that's not the case at all, Buck. I mean, this is a state that Biden won by 10 points. A lot of people thought this was a definitive, that McAuliffe was going to win no matter who got nominated for the Republican nominee. And over the course of the last few months, that dynamic has changed dramatically. And I think, Buck, a lot of it has been things that have fallen into Glenn Youngkin's lap over the education situation here in the state, especially Loudoun County, but other counties as well, where you've seen a grassroots revolt among parents. And the great thing is, as it's fallen into Glenn Youngkin's lap, the issue, he's embraced it. He's embraced the issue and said, I'm going to defend parents' right to actually have an impact and decide how their children are educated. So in some ways, Glenn Youngkin is a fortunate benefactor from some of the dynamics, but to his credit, he's embraced it.
Yeah, I mean, to tell me this, what has Youngkin done that's put him in this position? I mean, I've heard a fair number of people who watch us pretty closely in Virginia say they feel like he's been catching his stride as he goes. You know, he's been gaining momentum, not just in terms of the polls, but also in the way that he presents and in the way that he's stepping into this moment. You said he's taking advantage of this moment, but what has Youngkin done right to get to this place?
Well, he's run a good campaign. I mean, let's be honest. It's been a good campaign on a variety of fronts. Obviously, he has some personal wealth, so he's been well-funded. He's also done a good job on fundraising on top of that. They've done a good job of organizing on a variety of fronts. And the good thing, Buck, that I've noticed on a few different fronts, there are poll watchers, poll workers in a lot of these polling places across the state, been there every day. Of course, early voting started on September 17th here in Virginia. So it's 45 days out. So they've been very well organized on that front. But they have also been very well organized on getting their people out. And I think you're going to see a tremendous turnout today from Republican voters. And the interesting dynamic, Buck, and I know I messaged this to you offline. For perspective, in 2020, we lost the early vote absentee vote here in Virginia by 31 points. As of this morning, we had calculated American Majority Action, Youngkin only losing it by 16. I heard word this morning from the Youngkin campaign that they were only down by 14. So significant strides in making sure, again, part of it, that the Democrats here are not that energized. But between them not being energized and the Youngkin people doing a lot better job on early voting and absentee, we're coming into Election Day with a much narrow gap to overcome.
Who is Terry McAuliffe? I mean, we know he was the governor of Virginia before, but what does this guy stand for, Ned?
He's a political opportunist. I mean, he's a Clinton bag man. He's a whatever he thinks the issues are with the left. And this is the thing that I told my wife yesterday. The amazing thing about Terry McAuliffe and this crazy things that he said about parents don't have any right to tell teachers how their kids are educated. I think we have too many white teachers here in Virginia. He has said these things in an echo chamber of the left, and then he comes out to the general public and says these things, and it does not go well over well with parents, Republican, Democrat, or independent. So Terry McAuliffe is a political chameleon who is the Clinton's bag man, who obviously was a previous governor of Virginia, but also shows a little bit, Buck, that the Democratic Party here in Virginia is maybe not as strong and robust as it should be when you have to have a retread governor as your best chance to hold on to the governor's mansion.
Loudoun County and the parents pushing back against CRT feels like it's played a very large role in this, Ned, and certainly Glenn Youngkin has grabbed onto that and ran with it here. But yet there's still people who are trying to tell, and people in the media tell us, that there is no CRT. Here's an example from cable news.
At some point when your kid was doing math class sitting in the middle of the kitchen table, you heard the teacher say white people are evil. I don't think anyone actually heard that. So unless critical race theory magically appeared the moment kids went back to class, it is a lie. It is just a proxy. But it's something that he can use to gin up a certain kind of voters. Now, I think what's important to understand, I don't think there's anyone out there that's affected by these issues that didn't want to already be affected. Critical race theory, just like the caravan a couple years ago, just like in 2004 with, you know, Susie has two mommies and parents were afraid that their children were going to be taught about the LGBTQ agenda. All of these things are not new.
I mean, there's a lot of nonsense there, but let's just deal with the there's no critical race theory thing. We keep hearing this. I've seen the actual training manuals. I believe you can go on the Virginia Department of Education website right now and see CRT as of today.
Yeah, that was the thing. I mean, that gentleman there is either deeply ignorant or a liar, or both. We'll just say he's an ignorant liar, because it's clearly posted on the Virginia Board of Education that they are teaching CRT. They've been loud and proud about it. And in fact, when he says that, no, kids are not being taught that they're evil, or that, you know, somehow whiteness is a bad thing, we actually have had parents show up at the Loudoun County School Board saying, my six-year-old daughter has come home and basically been told that she is evil for being born white. So yeah, it's absolutely being taught in Virginia public schools, and it's not even been an issue. They haven't been shy about it. And now when they realize that this could be a really damaging issue to them, they're running away from it. But Buck, I will say this, as bad as CRT is, the thing that gets Democrat and independent parents really fired up are the advanced math classes and other classes not being taught, because those are supposedly racist. And Glenn Youngkin has said on day one, I will reinstitute advanced math classes and other advanced classes because our children need to have the best opportunities for their future. That's an issue that people don't really want to talk about, but it's been a huge issue, these advanced courses.
Ned, if it is in fact a Youngkin victory that we're dealing with, we'll know tomorrow or perhaps later tonight, but if it's a Youngkin victory, what do you think that means for the Democrat Party going forward in Virginia and going into the midterms? How does that affect the national political conversation?
Well, I think it changes everything, Buck. I think that this, if Youngkin wins and we win the other statewide and we take back the House of Delegates, I think it completely changes the narrative in Washington, D.C. There's a reason that I think they were pushing so hard to get this $1.75 trillion in infrastructure through before the Virginia elections, because I think the Democratic leadership realizes that if there are losses tonight in Virginia, a lot of Democrats are going to get cold feet. I think you'll see Democrats retire. And I think it will set the trend and increase the narrative that the midterms, even though they're always historically bad for the party that's in the White House, will be even worse. So I think this changes everything on a national level. And for Virginia Democrats, I think this is really going to be a sobering wake-up call when you won a state by 10 points to then have Youngkin maybe win by 2 or 3 and we sweep statewide and take the House of Delegates back. I think you'll find Virginia Democrats in disarray, but it will have a massive national impact.
Ned, thanks so much for the insight, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Buck.
More than 2,000 members of the New York City Fire Department called out sick yesterday as the city's vaccine mandate took effect, leaving firehouses dangerously understaffed throughout the Big Apple. We'll have more on the fallout from yesterday's deadline with New York Post columnist Carol Markowitz coming up. I want to tell you about my friends at My Digital Money. The crypto market is hot right now. People want to get on the action. How do you get started? There's so many digital tokens out there. There's Bitcoin, Ethereum, and a lot of others. Well, that's why you need My Digital Money. It's an easy-to-use, self-trading crypto IRA platform with incredible customer service. One of the few crypto companies that will answer your phone call and help you get started from day one. Your comfort and security is their absolute top priority. Look, the crypto market's heating up. This could be the best time in a long time to get into this exciting technology-based investment. When it comes to your money, you deserve a team of dedicated professionals who have your back, speak to you honestly, and treat you like a human, not a number. Check them out at MyDigitalMoney.com. That's MyDigitalMoney.com. We'll be right back with more of The Line.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
In New York City, 2,300 firefighters called out sick yesterday to protest the city's push to get the COVID vaccine, and Mayor Bill de Blasio isn't thrilled.
We've got some firefighters who are faking sick leave the last couple of days, saying they're sick when they're not, and then leaving their fellow firefighters in a lurch and creating a danger for all New Yorkers. That is unconscionable, and I assure you they are going to experience some consequences for what they've done.
Here's the reaction, New York Post columnist Carol Markowitz. Carol, good to see you. I'm not sure if you heard, but Joe Scarborough there, just among the most absurd people in cable news, is in the background saying, fire them. Pretty amazing. Of course, that's the attitude that he has. What do you think? What do you think is going on here? Where do you think this goes in New York with the showdown over vaccine mandates?
It's interesting because, you know, I think people like Joe Scarborough just have no idea what it takes to be a fireman or a police officer or a sanitation worker. And these are really tough jobs that are not, cannot be filled overnight. This isn't like a 2-second fill-in process. We can't get the National Guard to do it, as, you know, they like to say we can do for a lot of other things. We have a situation where things are going to get bad and things are going to get dangerous. And the concern for me is that I think our COVID numbers are going to go up in November, December, January, just like they did last year. We actually have more cases right now with 3 vaccines on the market than we did exactly a year ago today. It's a concern to me that we're heading into our cold season. We've had a very warm fall, and I think we've gotten lucky with the numbers so far. But I think these numbers will climb, and without, you know, the fire department and a lot of healthcare workers were fired during this period, and just all the services that we rely on in a city like New York, and to have high COVID numbers, it's going to be a disaster. I'm really worried about it.
Carol, do you think that the fire and NYPD folks are they? How does this play out? I mean, are they going to all lose their jobs, and maybe Governor DeSantis down in Florida hires a bunch of the cops and maybe some of the firefighters? It feels like we're at a moment here where there's, I mean, they either get the shot or they lose their jobs, but can the city really handle having, I think the number is, what, it was 9,000 and then 12,000 waiting for exemption? So you could have as many as about 20,000 people who aren't compliant one way or another. It depends on what happens with them with the exemptions.
Yeah. Well, look, they don't even have to go as far away as Florida. Suffolk County on Long Island wants them to come to them. Suffolk is, you know, an hour and change away from New York City, and yet they don't have a vaccine mandate in place. And they're saying to the police officers, we're hiring, and they pay a lot more than New York City does. And I'm sure they have to deal with a lot less nonsense than they do in New York City. So we're going to lose sort of our best people. One of the other things that I think has not gotten that much attention is it's not necessarily unvaccinated firefighters, for example, that are quitting or leaving or on sick leave or any of that. A lot of it might be just like experienced firefighters who just have had enough anyway. They live in this crazy city. So much seems to be getting worse all the time, and they're just leaving. And they're thinking, I'll just take my early retirement and I'll go to Florida or other saner states. And I kind of don't blame them. I get where they're coming from. Even if they're vaccinated, they don't want to be there anymore.
Switching gears here for a second, advisors to the CDC are meeting today, Carol, to make more detailed recommendations on which kids should get vaccinated. Now the FDA has paved the way for children age 5 to 11 to get Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. Here is Jeffrey Zients, White House COVID response coordinator, talking about how we got plenty of vaccine for all the kids.
As we await the CDC decision, we are not waiting on the operations and logistics. In fact, we've been preparing for weeks. Thanks to the president's actions, we've secured enough vaccine for all 28 million kids ages 5 through 11. And we look forward to parents having the opportunity to vaccinate their kids.
Carol, I mean, I've looked at these numbers many, many times. I think, to be fair, I think it's like a one in 500,000 or 600,000 chance of a child getting COVID and dying. But, you know, depending on how you gauge it, close to a million, really. I mean, if you it depends on whose numbers you're going to use. A one in a million shot, and they got to get the shot anyway. Does it ever get too crazy?
So I've been kind of outspokenly pro-vaccine, even when, say, Democrats didn't, you know, like Kamala Harris were sort of throwing shade on it. I got vaccinated as soon as I could. More importantly, I got my mother and my in-laws vaccinated as soon as I could. I'm not vaccinating my children. It is a virus that does not affect them. And, you know, I might be convinced if it was the argument like, okay, we need it for herd immunity, like we need for other vaccines. Maybe they're not susceptible to some other virus either, but we need it for herd immunity. No scientist at this point. I would love to hear from any scientist that believes herd immunity is possible with these COVID vaccines. I think that does not exist anymore. The New York Times interviewed a bunch of scientists who said that is not possible anymore, is out of reach. This is not the kind of vaccine where you achieve herd immunity.
Well, it's also not the kind of virus, I'm sure, as you know, Carol, where you achieve herd immunity because it mutates. People keep comparing this to MMR. Measles, for example, is very stable. There is measles. That is the virus you are up against. There is no measles 3.0, 8.0, et cetera. Yes. COVID, how many variants have we already had?
That's right. So the variants coupled with the fact that these vaccines don't prevent infection and they don't prevent you from spreading it means that herd immunity is out of reach. So I don't see any argument whatsoever for vaccinating children. I think if I found out I needed a booster, I was tweeting about serology tests, like you can find out whether or not you have COVID fighting antibodies. If I learned that I didn't, I might get a booster. I'm pro-vaccine. I think that vaccinating children's completely pointless, and I don't understand why we're doing it.
I mean, here's Dr. Ben Carson just pointing out that no one really knows what they're doing insofar as they haven't run long-term studies on this or tests. They didn't develop this vaccine for children. Here's what Ben Carson says.
Do you agree with the CDC's decision to vaccinate children 5 to 11 with the Pfizer vaccine?
Absolutely not. This is really sort of a giant experiment. Do we want to put our children at risk when we know that the risk of the disease to them is relatively small, but we don't know what the future risks are? Why would we do a thing like that? It makes no sense whatsoever.
I mean, just to add into, Carol, you and I have been talking this for a long time, and I understand the COVID religion very well. I think you do too. And so I can sit here and say, I think with substantial confidence, that any area of the country where they mask up children in school right now will continue to mask up children even after they are forced to get the shot to be in school, even though the reason for masking them up, we were told, was they couldn't get the vaccine.
You're 100% correct. And actually, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky has already said that they will not recommend removing masks, even post-vaccination. I also think it's sort of abhorrent that so many schools are already saying they're going to mandate vaccinating. The state of California, of course, Gavin Newsom famously said that schools were going to require all kids to be vaccinated, 5 to 11, everybody. And then, of course, it came out that his 12-year-old, who was already eligible for vaccination, had not been vaccinated yet because, you know, reasons. There's always good reasons when it's your own kid. In New York City, I've heard that private schools, Horace Mann, private schools, Rod F. Shalom, are already saying they're going to mandate vaccination. I think this is so misguided, and it's scary, actually, because it's coming to any school district. Like you said, anybody who's masked right now, likely going to have to, they're going to mandate vaccines for your kids.
Unbelievable. Carol, we got to keep fighting. They're not getting less crazy. They're actually getting crazier. The more wrong they are, the crazier they actually get is what we've seen. So I'm really concerned about where this goes. But thank you for being with us. Great column as always.
Thank you.
President Biden's in the UK today as part of the United Nations Climate Change Conference. So what, if anything, has Joe Biden achieved during his time overseas? We'll come and come back in a moment, talk to the senior vice president of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, Jonathan Shanzer, about that trip. I want to talk to you about protecting yourself from online criminals. Look, the real threat you're up against, the really devastating one, isn't some cyber thief taking your credit card number. You can deal with that. That happens, right? Your massive risk is he takes over ownership of your home. It's called home title theft. The FBI calls it one of the fastest growing crimes out there. Cyber criminals hack into vulnerable government, bank, or mortgage company servers where copies of your home's title is stored. Forges your signature stating you sold your home to him. Then he borrows on your home and leaves you in debt. You won't know until collection notices show up. Protect your most valuable asset. Go to HometitleLock.com and register your address to see if you're already a victim. Use promo code RADIO for 30 free days of protection. Again, that's HometitleLock.com, promo code RADIO, HometitleLock.com, promo code RADIO. We'll be right back with more Hold the Line.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
You snooze, you lose, says the New York Post, talking about President Biden after he apologized on behalf of America for, of course, former President Trump pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement. What Biden didn't do, however, is apologize for falling asleep at the United Nations Climate Change Conference itself. Is this how a president should act, especially when he claims this is an extraordinarily important climate summit on an existential threat, which is what they view climate change as, of course. They say it all the time. Seems like the wrong image to send when you're the leader of the free world. Senior Vice President of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, Jonathan Shanzer, joins us now to discuss. Jonathan, how are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm all right. I mean, I see this whole climate mess going on right here, and I just wonder, you know, what is it with people? Like, Joe Biden, what's accomplished by him being involved in this? It just feels like honestly, the fact that he fell asleep, I feel like was unintentional honesty from him insofar as why stay awake for this stuff?
Yeah, look, I'm sure it was unfortunate, and we've seen the president fall asleep in other important meetings. He was resting his eyes when he met with Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett in the White House not too long ago. I think we could probably talk about all the different places where he looks like he's nodding off, and I'm not sure how productive that would be. What I would say, though, is that, you know, if there really is that kind of concern right now worldwide for climate change, emissions, things like that, and also there happens to be a lot of significant concern about the rise of China, wouldn't it make sense for the world to actually address the massive polluting that we're seeing out of Beijing? Right? I mean, they are one of the worst polluters in the world. I think there is action to be taken, but I'm not seeing a whole lot of initiative there on the part of the United States or the others for that matter. It seems to be more about what they can do, where they're already cutting back on a lot of those emissions and doing their part.
I mean, VIPs, including Jeff Bezos, flew to a climate conference on 400 private jets, sparking some fury from people who are very, very concerned about all this. The optics of this, Jonathan, it does get kind of tough after a while. It seems like a lot of not just world leaders, but ultra-rich people flying in their private jets to talk about how everybody else needs to take the bus.
That's right. And I think John Kerry is another one that folks have pointed to over the years, someone who likes to fly private jets and has logged a lot of air miles around the world in pursuit of a climate deal. And so, yeah, the optics are terrible. I think they want to be able to pass the buck on to the general public while they do as they please. It's obviously problematic. But again, I do think that there are specific actors that you could probably really focus on and get a lot done, but it would require political will. Instead, I think they're going for that least common denominator approach, agreeing to talk, agreeing to agree, but maybe not actually accomplishing a whole lot at the end of the day.
There is an enemy that they seem to have focused in on and plan to address after this big meeting, Jonathan. Methane. Here is President Biden talking about the methane menace.
It's going to improve health, reduce asthma, respiratory-related emergencies. It's going to improve the food supply as well by cutting crop losses and related ground-level pollution. And it's going to boost our economies, saving companies money, reducing methane leaks, capturing methane, turn it into new revenue streams, as well as creating good-paying union jobs for our workers.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The war on methane now reduces asthma, improves our crops. I at some point, I just wonder, like, does Biden even believe any of this stuff? Do you think he actually thinks what he's saying makes any sense? He certainly doesn't understand it at any meaningful level.
Look, I don't think he's an environmental scientist. I do kind of wonder, you know, is the idea that we're going to start banning cows because of our concerns over methane? I don't really know the answer to these things. I will say on a more serious note, though, that I am more concerned about how this sort of rhetoric is creeping into the discussion that we hear out of the U.S. military, that now it's actually the Pentagon is talking about climate change as a threat that they need to combat, as opposed to the military readiness that we rely upon the Pentagon for. And so in the immediate aftermath of that withdrawal, disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, and some of the rhetoric that we're seeing out of the Pentagon now about these supposed threats that they have to tackle, one gets a sense that this has jumped the shark, that the conversation here has gone beyond where it needs to be. It's one thing to have environmental scientists really looking for the most opportune ways, the most efficient ways to battle a climate crisis, on some level or another. It's another thing to start enlisting people who really should not be looking at this in the first place.
Wanted to switch gears, Jonathan. Speaking of conflict, you got a new book out, Gaza Conflict 2021, Hamas, Israel, and 11 Days of War. It's out later this week. Why'd you write it? What do we need to know about it?
Sure. Well, I wrote it after watching that war for 11 days straight. I was able to watch it in real time because, you know, today's day and age, you can watch everything from the Middle East, smartphone technology, smart TV technology. And I got to say that the gap between what was reported here and what passed for reasoned analysis and what I saw happening in the region, both in Arabic and on Israeli TV, the gap between truth and analysis here was just vast. So when I was able to catch my breath for a little bit, I went back, looked at those 11 days of war, looked at where the press got it wrong. There were a good six or seven spots where really the mistakes were huge. So this is an attempt to go back and correct the record. I think it's not enough to say anymore that there is a media bias here in the United States. I think it's willful blindness, and it's something that I hope the book can begin to address.
What should we take? I mean, what is the upshot of what it does that we seem to have over in that part of the world, Israel having to deal with these spasms of violence that it flares up? I mean, if you look at the last 5 or 10 years, there'll be some rocket fire, and then there's an incursion, and then there's all this, and then it goes back to some sense of normalcy thereafter, but we all know that it's only a matter of time. What is this politically doing in the region? I mean, what is this actually leading to?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, and this is, I think, the context that was missing throughout all of it, and that is that Iran is using its proxies around the region to stir things up, to keep everything on a low flame or sometimes even a high flame. So Hamas is a proxy of Iran. All of its weapons, most of its training, it all comes from Iran. Same thing with Hezbollah, same thing with the Shiite militias in Iraq and Syria, same thing for the Houthis in Yemen. Iran continues to sow mayhem around the region. we need to be aware of the fact that these are not just flare-ups because the Palestinians hate the Israelis or because the Middle East is a dangerous place. We need to basically make sure that everybody knows where the buck stops, and it really is Iran. And that actually gets us back to Biden's trip in Europe. I mean, here you see right now the president trying to pursue a renewed Iran nuclear deal with some of our partners in Europe, and it would be disastrous. It would actually be yielding huge amounts of cash yet again to Iran, letting them replenish their coffers, which will then trickle down to these proxies that we just mentioned here, and likely ensuring that we'll see more wars along the lines of what we saw back in May.
Jonathan, good luck on the book. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Buck. Good to see you.
Even MSNBC calls Biden's snoozefest at the UN climate conference embarrassing. We'll bring that story coming up in quick hits. I want to tell you one more time, though, about my friends at My Digital Money. Cryptocurrency is heating up. Bitcoin, Ethereum, so many digital tokens out there. Where do you get started? That's where My Digital Money comes in. It's an easy-to-use, self-trading crypto IRA platform with incredible customer service. It's one of the few U.S.-based crypto companies that will actually answer your phone call and help you get started. Your comfort and security is their absolute top priority. Look, the crypto market's heating up. This might be the best time in a long time to get into this exciting technology-based investment. When it comes to your money, you deserve a team of dedicated professionals who have your back, speak to you honestly, and treat you like a human, not a number. Check them out at MyDigitalMoney.com. That's MyDigitalMoney.com. And we'll be right back with tonight's Quick Hits. Climate activist Greta Thunberg led an awkward chant at the UN Climate Change Conference in Glasgow, and even MSNBC can't deny the embarrassment that is President Joe Biden. It is time for Quick Hits. Let's first start with this. Look, we've all been there. You're at a meeting. It's a little warm in the room, maybe. You know, that really always got me over the edge here. It's a little warm in the room. You're at a meeting. It's kind of boring, you know? You're kind of bored. You're like, what am I even watching? Why am I sitting here? And then all of a sudden you start to... You feel that wooziness come up. We've all been there. But, you know, if you're the leader of the free world, you're at a big climate conference, don't you think maybe you just take a little caffeine, drink a little coffee, make yourself snap out of it? I mean, Joe Biden is at this UN climate conference situation, and he fell asleep. Now, remember, I think the climate change conference is an absurdity. I think that this is a non-existent problem, and these people are all basically... worshiping at some false golden calf here. This is like a religion. It doesn't make any sense. But they think that they're actually saving the world. They believe that this is an existential threat. And so if you don't take it as seriously, you know, you're a bad person. Here's MSNBC, who's very upset. Well, let's be honest, a little upset with Biden for falling asleep.
This is the fifth day of the president's overseas tour, and he was seen on camera with his eyes closed. It appears that perhaps he was dozing, and in these settings, cameras are all around, and the camera caught President Biden, who turned 79 later this month, with his eyes closed for a period of time. And you're right, these can be embarrassing situations. You have the contrast of leaders, including President Biden, calling for the urgency of these issues, of addressing climate, and a moment like that in a session can be a political obstacle for a moment.
Mm-hmm. What she's saying is the guy's too old and people think he's already in the early stages of dementia, and now it looks like he needs nap time in the middle of the day, even during major conferences, because he's too old for the job, which many of us said all along. In fact, Democrats used to recognize this themselves, and yet here we are. He's the guy who is the president of the United States, which is absurd. The opposite of too old for the job may be not old enough for the job. In fact, I think it is. And when you're talking about global leader of the climate change movement, such as it is, 18-year-old Greta Thunberg is, it's remarkable. I mean, I think that this is, it's sad that there are so many adults that worship this child god as though she has anything important to say, honestly, about anything, and that they like having a child chide them and tell them their societies are weak and corrupt and decrepit because they're not taking climate change seriously enough. I don't know, folks. You got to bust out the Freudian stuff here. This makes no sense. But if you want to get an idea of the intellectual level of some of Greta Thunberg's stuff, here she is leading a chant outside one of these climate change conferences, and this is what she says.
No more exploitation of people and nature and the planet. No more exploitation. No more blah, blah, blah. No more whatever the they're doing inside there.
No more blah, blah, blah. They're actually chanting that. Because it doesn't even matter. Because Greta Thunberg could walk out there and just say blah, 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 and they would all say she's brilliant, she's saving the world. Because this is the unreality. This is some other alternate universe where adults should be paying attention to an ill-educated 18-year-old girl who clearly has some issues. Okay, so the View Halloween show praised a kid dressed as a booster vaccine shot with a vaccine passport. This was a thing that happened.
Here we have our adorable COVID-19 vaccine, but we added a twist. We added the booster. We put an actual kid's booster, my son's booster, on the back of the costume. And our trick-or-treater is ready to go. She's got her COVID-19 passport little book there.
That's cool.
And she's reminding everybody to go get your boosters.
Go get your boosters. I mean, okay, fine. Whatever. I don't know. That one doesn't upset me. This one is going to upset me, though. Colin Kaepernick, among the most exploitative and idiotic people in American political and cultural discourse these days. I mean, just a true moron in every sense, and also really damaging to the country, really dishonest with what he is peddling. Here he is telling people that there are white people, that white people in America in general only like black characters with, quote, white characteristics. This is from his Netflix special.
Over the years, there have been some very popular TV shows starring black people. These shows share archetypal black characters, including social outcasts who assimilate or conform, like Carlton Banks or Steve Urkel.
Wow, you guys have got some real A-list people here.
White people love these dudes. Everything from the way they dress, way they talk.
You're our man.
Even the way they dance. It's also non-threatening.
James Spurlock, we call him twofer, because with him you get a two for one. He's a black guy and a Harvard guy.
These characters have come to be known by the term acceptable Negro. The acceptable Negro is a black character who inhabits white characteristics, who makes white people feel comfortable.
He's a moron. And the lead characters on those shows don't even have these so-called characteristics that he's identifying. But a lot of people on the left should feel ashamed for supporting this idiot. That's it for tonight's Hold the Line. The No Spin News with Bill O'Reilly is up next. Shields high.